Welcome to the Everyday Innovator Podcast for product managers, developers, and innovators. Your host is Chad McAllister, who gives you innovation training your customers will love you for. Get ready to take your career to the next level, for the doctor is in.
Hi, this is Chad, your host and founder of Product Innovation Educators, where I help product managers become product masters. Product managers must be effective communicators. We have ideas and product concepts to share, but the best idea will fall flat if not properly explained in terms our audience understands and appreciates. Further, if the idea is complicated, we have to find ways to make it easy to understand. This is the world that my guest, Lee Lefevre, operates in. He is the author of Explanation, Making Your Ideas, Products, and Services Easier to Understand. And today, his company creates tools and resources to help explain ideas and products. In the interview, he shares the three-step approach to explaining any idea or product. The three P's are planning, packaging, and presenting. He also told me after the interview had stopped that he's creating a free mini course to help you be better at explaining your ideas and products. Get the link to the free mini course, the summary of the discussion, and the full transcript. Go to theeverydayinnovator.com/068. Now to the interview. Lee, thanks for joining the Everyday Innovator podcast. Glad to have you as a guest.
Happy to be here.
So your strength is really in finding ways to communicate ideas and products in ways that are really easy to understand, right? Easy to understand terms. But when I look at people's backgrounds, I'm always curious to see kind of what were the steps that led up to the expertise that they have now. And I saw in your background that you used to be a manager for a couple of large online communities. And I'm curious if, as you were managing these communities, if that's where you learned some of the ideas that you share now about taking complicated messages and making them easier to understand.
Yes, definitely. It was really kind of a formative experience for me in this whole world of communication and explanation. You're right. I was working at a company here in the Seattle area that was doing healthcare data, healthcare database kind of software. And we realized that the users were wanting to talk to each other about how they were using the software. And I kind of took the lead on that. I was really excited about the sort of communication part of the web and what was online communities at the time, and became the online community manager. And at the time, nobody really knew what that was. That was around like 1999, 2000 or so. So the company, thankfully, let me sort of create this online community and be the online community manager. And I think the only way that that could happen was through being very clear about what this new thing was that people were skeptical about. And it was the first time I really saw that understanding, getting people to really truly understand something is really the key to everything. It's like, unless that happens, you can't do a lot of things you really want to do. And it was when I really first started to practice this idea of explanation and trying to answer different kinds of questions. Not just what it is, but why should I care about it is an example of that.
Yeah, and if the context was using software and the user's experiences with that, that can be a fairly complicated subject matter to work through, you know, especially when you're doing it through a community forum, which is primarily text-based.
Yeah, definitely. I think I had a lot of the challenges that I'm sure a lot of the listeners have, where it wasn't just working with executives at the company to try to understand why they should maybe spend a little bit of money on this, but also working with, you know, the users of the software who had never maybe even written anything onto a website before. And here we were asking them to, you know, share their thoughts and ideas in sort of a semi-public way. I really saw that they didn't really care about the features. They didn't care about the sort of minutiae or the details. They really had bigger picture questions about why do I care about this, or why does it make sense that we would do this? And that really today still is the thing I talk about all the time, is answering different kinds of questions.
And you're right. Product managers, people involved with innovation, these are problems that we face. And I want to dive into that in just a minute. First, I was curious to get your perspective on something. And I don't know if you're on the side where you think this is a myth or this is truth. But there is this thought out there. And one place it originated from was Peter Drucker once said something that kind of gets misinterpreted into believing that good products actually sell themselves, right? And he was actually talking about products that are designed properly for the consumers will provide them value and will be easier to sell. But regardless, there's this notion, you know, hey, we just got to build a good product and it will sell itself. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, I'm a huge fan of putting the time in and doing the research and knowing your audience and solving a problem and getting all that into the product. I think it's really essential. I really think that's a big part of integrity. You know, like your product should have high integrity. But in terms of selling itself, there's so many other things that are wrapped up in that. You know, Apple makes great products, obviously, but they spend a ton on advertising too. There's a lot of selling that goes on that, you know, I think is necessary to get the awareness out there. But I think more focused on your question here, when I first heard, you know, will a good product sell itself, I kind of wondered, what does good mean? you know, it takes so many different forms. But here's how I think about it, is if your product is turning people into advocates, if it's making such an impression on them that they can't help but tell their friend or talk about it, I'm personally like that right now with the Amazon Echo, the little speaker voice-operated system that Amazon made. Like, I tell everybody how much I enjoy it. And I think that's an example where it's a well-done product. It actually works, and it turned me into an advocate. And I think, to me, that's the thing, is can you turn people into advocates or not?
Right. But even in that example, and I thought the Apple example you gave really fits well too, at some point, you do have to figure out what is the right way to message the product's benefits and value so customers even pay attention.
Yeah, right? For sure.
And something sucked you into the Echo initially, and now you're one of the loyal fans that are telling others about it too.
Yeah, definitely. And the Echo is kind of funny too, because it's a really hard thing to explain. I mean, you know, it's this new class of device that is not it's not easy to reference. There's no sort of easy analogy for it. The only thing I've ever thought of was thinking about a clock radio, right? Like, what if you could talk to a clock radio and tell it what to play, and it would just tell you what the weather is and what the traffic is and things like that. It sort of plays a similar role in your life, but it's voice activated and connected to the web. That's the closest I've come.
Right. Do you have yours connected to any home automation resources, like turning on lights or anything?
No, we haven't done that. We have another system that actually does that in our house, that this doesn't talk to you right now, but we're hoping that it will.
Okay. Yeah, it's something I've been looking into because I'm intrigued by Echo and mm-hmm. There's the light switches that Wemo does and a couple others that I like that idea. You walk home and tell your Echo, turn on the lights, and you know, it just does it.
So. Yeah. Yeah, definitely.
But these are fun things to play with. Okay, so back to product managers and needing to explain things more clearly so we are communicating well. Your strength. So let's talk about this in terms of product management. And product managers, we always need to be able to talk about things clearly, certainly. But there's two times that this really becomes very important to a product manager's career. One is when we have a new product concept, an idea that we're trying to gain support for. And so we're talking to all the people around us, and we're really trying to influence the stakeholders, probably most importantly, the ones that are controlling the funds for new projects, and trying to get them to buy into this product concept if we really think this is something of value to our customers. And then the other time is indeed when we have the product, we're getting ready to launch to the market, and we're involved in the launch planning and that go-to-market strategy. And what is it we need to tell customers to help our product stand out in what is probably a pretty competitive space and differentiate it from others? And when you talk about making the complicated easy to grasp and you have a framework for actually approaching that, we'll talk it through. Does it apply to both of those situations for product managers?
Yeah, you know, I think it can. You know, I think in regards to those two examples, you know, I think that any professional, whether you're a product manager, you're in marketing, or even if you're an engineer or whatever your job title is, that when it comes time to communicate, sometimes we're busy, we're under a lot of pressure, we have a lot of information in front of us, and I think sometimes it's hard to realize that you are sort of working inside your head, like what you're going to say and how it's going to be perceived, and I think that can work sometimes, but I think that when I talk a lot about communicating in a way that's truly understandable. You have to be able to step out of your head and think about what is going on in another person's head, like what's going on in the executive's head or the customer's head, and how can you account for that in terms of the language and examples that you use. And what I'm really talking about is empathizing, like thinking of empathy as like something that, that has to be a part of your process, because the explanations don't, or I should say explanations do live or die based on how they're perceived by your intended audience. So the only way to be successful is to think really hard about your audience. And when I say think really hard, I mean empathize. Put yourself in their shoes and think, how is this going to sound to them? And the problem is when we're busy, when we're under pressure, when we have deadlines, that sometimes falls by the wayside. And we revert back to the language examples that work for us and then are in our head. And I think you really got to get out of your head and into somebody else's head to make it work.
Right, and frame it in the terms of your audience and how they would be approaching it.
That's right.
I recently heard your work referenced in this context, and I don't even know if the metaphor that was used is one that you used or not, but I'll run it by with you and see what you think. Mm-hmm. They were talking about in terms of, you know, as product managers, we should have deep knowledge of our product. We hopefully at some point have deep knowledge of the industry, the domain we're in, and we really understand our customers. And if we think about that knowledge base on a scale from 1 to 10, right, we're at the 10. We have a handle on what's really going on. And then we think about trying to communicate the product or its value aspects of it to either our internal stakeholders or the customers themselves. And we might get down to like a level 7 and thinking, oh, I'm doing really well. I'm trying to put things in terms of my mm-hmm. listeners, right? When in reality, we need to get down to a level 1 and mm-hmm. make this easy for them to grasp.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely. You know, that's very similar to something that's in my book and something we use all the time to talk about explanation. It's really a scale from A to Z.
Okay.
It's exactly the same principle. Your 10 is my Z. I think the alphabet works because it's not a value scale.
Right.
So it's really just a way to think about it. But I think that's a great way to think about where are you and where is your audience, and how do you get to that one on your scale or the A side on our scale? And I think that what happens often is the further you go down the scale towards, you know, really deep understanding, the more likely that the knowledge that you have, the information that's in your head, sort of curses you. And this is a subject that I'm sure you're aware of. Called The Curse of Knowledge. And I first heard about it from Chip and Dan Heath in the book Made to Stick, which is a book I really recommend. It's not their idea either. It was actually from some economists that I can reference later maybe. But the idea of The Curse of Knowledge is the more that you know about a subject, the harder it is to imagine what it's like not to know. So the depth of our knowledge curses us, and it makes it harder for us to empathize. And I think that's what I mentioned before about empathy. It becomes harder the further you are down the scale. And so it becomes a challenge to think about, well, what is it like at one or A on the scale? But the more time you think about it and the more analysis you can do, the better off you'll be.
That makes good sense. And I really do want to bring this conversation down too to something that's really applicable for the everyday innovators listening. So that as product managers and innovators, we can do a better job of communicating complicated concepts and ideas in ways that are really easily understood by our audience. Mm-hmm. And your framework helps us with that. And I like that. I like things I can remember. So I remember yours is a 3P framework, because the 3 P's are plan, package, and present. So let's talk through those, the steps that product managers should take to prepare for a communication that could be complicated, and they want to make it easy. And I suspect we should start with plan, right?
Mm-hmm. Sure.
Okay.
Sure. I think that explanation to a big degree is really about anticipating needs and thinking, what is the situation I'm going into, and what are the needs of those people, and how does that influence how I think about my communication? So a lot of ways, planning is thinking about a situation and asking questions like looking at a presentation and saying, yes, this is factually correct. Yes, this has the information I'm trying to communicate. And yes, this is branded well, and so on. But there's a question that I think that's the question there, which is this understandable? Is this in a familiar language that people are actually going to be able to understand? And a lot of times that question is left out when everything else is a priority. And I think that's the real message of the plan part of developing explanation, is making understanding a priority and being very intentional about that and making that a goal to say, not only is it going to be technically correct and beautiful and, you know, have the right perspective, but is it understandable? That's the big thing to me.
Right. So as we're anticipating needs of our audience, asking that question, is it really understandable to that specific audience? Sure, it's understandable to us, but maybe not to them.
Sure, I hope so.
and in that planning, are you thinking through also what's your key objective that you're trying to accomplish in that communication?
Yeah, definitely. I think that this is something I've been thinking about a lot more lately, is that idea of purpose when you go into a meeting, and I think that really influences a lot. An example is, you know, are you there to persuade someone? Or are you there to argue a point? Or are you there to simply inform or sell? And all of these things are sort of facets that explanation can obviously work into, but in a slightly different way. And I think that's obviously a big thing, is to think, well, what am I trying to accomplish? What is the thing I want them to do after I do this?
Yeah, exactly. And I think I know in the past I've gotten that muddled a little bit, right? Where I might first try to do some persuading, where I'm actually there to inform people, maybe train them on some process, but I first begin persuading that they should pay attention to this. And I end up muddling the two different purposes, and the whole thing becomes less effective, somehow watered down.
Sure, yep.
Okay, so focus on clear purpose, anticipate the needs, and ask if this really is understandable to the audience or not.
Yeah.
So that's planning. What about packaging?
Packaging is really a process of looking at the facts and the information that you're trying to communicate, and then figuring out a way, or thinking through a way, to sort of put it in a different world. An example that I use for this is things like superstitions and fables. I think fables are a great example. Sometimes I say, you know, do you really think it's bad luck to walk under a ladder, or is it really just not a good idea? And I think it's really just not a good idea, but it doesn't work just to tell someone, hey, you shouldn't walk under a ladder. You have to repackage it and turn it into something that's actually useful for them. And so I think there's a lot of ways to repackage ideas, but the things that I focus on in the book and that I think are the most effective is to look at the facts you're trying to communicate and think, you know, what's the context of this? And think about that as packaging. Is there a story that you can tell, or an anecdote that you can use to explain these facts more effectively? Or is there an analogy or connection that you can make to existing knowledge that they have that gives those facts more meaning to them? You know, these are all things that take the facts and put them in a different form so that they're more understandable. That's really the big idea.
Yeah, and I can imagine that the metaphor that you might use, if you're telling a story to try to explain the facts, the metaphor is going to change very much depending on the audience, because you want to pick something that obviously makes sense to the audience.
Yeah, definitely. I think one of the most powerful ways to repackage something is that kind of analogy, where you think, okay, this audience surely understands this, and if they understand that, then we can start talking about that, and then I can slowly introduce this new idea on top of it and say, X and Y are actually more alike than you think, here's why, and it can be a really great foundation for their, you know, understanding.
Yeah, absolutely. Do you have an example that illustrates that well, that either from the book or that you've worked with a customer?
Well, I mean, a lot of our videos have been our analogies, but the one that I think is really interesting and that I use in my talk sometimes is the story of Dan O'Bannon and Ronald Shusett, who were screenwriters in Hollywood in the 70s, and they were trying to sell a new movie, and it wasn't getting picked up by any of the studios, and they were frustrated, and then they realized that they could actually pitch their new movie using just three words, and it was just a really immediate connection that made an immediate connection to the audience. And the movie was actually Alien, which ended up starring Sigourney Weaver. It definitely got made. And the words that they used to pitch Alien in those early days became Jaws in space. And those words actually led to them getting the movie bought by a studio and made into a blockbuster. And I think that that's an example of everybody in the late 70s had seen Jaws. Everybody knew what it was like. And by simply saying Jaws in space, your mind just opens up to a whole way of thinking about a movie. And I think that's really a really powerful one.
Yeah, it's a way to reposition how people might first think about the idea. And, yep. And you're leading them down a path that's just easier for them to grasp.
Yeah, yeah.
And I chuckled only because I haven't seen this, but there's what, the shark tornado or something, but I've seen this clip of sharks flying through space.
Yeah, Sharknado.
Sharknado, yes.
Yeah, that's right. I actually watched that recently. It's one of those movies that you watch because it's so bad.
The clip I saw was a riot, right?
It's a riot.
They're eating the space station. It was just funny. But how we do package up and position these concepts makes a huge difference on how our audience receives them. And I think, you know, my background is engineering. A lot of people get into product management from engineering. They might get there from marketing or sales or other ways too. But from that engineering perspective, it's often easy for me to just focus on, you know, here's the solution. This is what it does, right? And try to tie into benefits. But it's a whole nother thing to really try to think about how to position this in the context that someone would find. We want them to find value in it, you know, and how to lead them down a path to get there.
Yeah, no, it's really true. And I think scientists, engineers, people who for whom details really matter for a good reason, and who are often detail oriented, have sometimes have the biggest struggles because they know, or you know, that the devil really is in the details. And that's where, for you, understanding really happens. You've long since learned the big picture. And sometimes getting out of those details is the hard part.
Right.
One thing I'll say, too, is that I've heard before, especially in the scientific community, that there's a lot of people who are not big advocates of using analogies because they're inherently inaccurate. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's sort of a shame in a lot of ways, because I think there's a quote I love from Sigmund Freud, who said that analogies, it is true, decide nothing, but they can make one feel more at home. And I really like that, because he's saying that analogies are never perfect, but that's okay, because we can use them to help people understand something new. And really, that's what I'm talking about as the goal, is understanding. And the details that really matter so much, they have to be the audience has to be motivated to learn those. I think the bigger goal, in my view, should be creating the understanding first, even without the details, so that they become motivated and interested and become a customer of information about that thing. And that, to me, that's really the goal, the initial goal, that details don't do that. I think explanations do.
Right. I like that. And I was thinking, as an example, as you were saying that, if I say there's billions and billions of stars, you know, a lot of people that are familiar with Carl Sagan's work will say, oh, well, yeah, of course, you know, and I think he said that. I actually don't know if it's a verbatim quote or not, but I think of him in that context, and taking this, you know, complicated material of astronomy and boiling it down to simple concepts that I could wrap my hands around.
Yeah. There's another thing that he said that's sort of like that. That's like we are a speck on a speck on a speck, you know, in the universe, like that everything we know is just a speck.
Yeah. Compared to the vastness. That's good.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay. So we have our planning, the package, and now present. What's presenting about?
Well, I think it's really using media. It's finding opportunities to not just maybe use white papers and discussions and presentations with a million bullet points, and thinking about how to use visuals or drawings or models or whatever it is to make your explanations more compelling and more interesting, to bring people to them, to put them in a form that can be shared. I think that's really a powerful thing that really comes from our work at Common Craft, where we make explainer videos, and those videos are tools that people use to educate others, and they can be easily shared. And what I think is unique about this point in history is, for the first time, everybody now has tools that don't require, you know, $10,000. They don't require a year of education. It's something you can pick up in an afternoon and start playing with and find that suddenly, you know, this thing that you've been trying to explain for a long time can be put in the form of a quick animated video that you make with PowerPoint that makes for really compelling media that can be a part of your toolbox as a professional.
And there seems to be this intersection. I'm curious to get your thoughts on this. The on my to-do list this year is to become a student of copywriting. And I've been on the sidelines watching this field of copywriting for the last good couple of years and learning more about it, but by no means do I feel accomplished, far from it, actually. But I appreciate copywriters, now that I even know these people exist, because they're so good at analyzing. Back to your first point about empathizing with our audience and who we're really trying to get the message to, they're so good at analyzing the words, the phrases, the terms that make sense to them and the problem you're really addressing, and then writing copy that addresses that, right? And so for everyone I just lost, where we would expect to find copywriters is anytime an ad is written, right? Or like a landing page that you come across that explains a product or something. And copywriters are good at putting together the language that should address the audience and in a way that really motivates them to take some action. That's what advertisers are trying to do.
Yep.
But then there's this collision that you're also addressing with using rich media, you know, ways to make even the message more compelling and interesting and engaging. And it seems like these two things together can create the most motivation for someone to understand and then take action on the message we're giving them.
Yeah, I think so. I think so. People definitely are drawn to different kinds of media. Some like reading, some like watching videos, some like a combination. I'm, of course, a fan of videos. One of the things that I think, especially what animated videos do, is there's a theory called dual coding theory, which sounds kind of boring and lame. But the basic idea, which I think is kind of fascinating, is that whatever your learning style is, whether you like, you're a kinesthetic learner that needs to touch something, or you prefer to hear it or prefer to see it or whatever it is, that this theory says that the most effective way to learn is to see visuals of something with your eyes while you're hearing audio that is referencing that visual thing. And to me, that's what videos really do a lot of times, especially animated ones, is they give you these very memorable visual cues that are able to get into your head more easily when you're also hearing relevant information about those visuals as well. So that's just a little video thing that I think is interesting.
And I've been at your website to look at your videos, but for everyone listening, give us some context around this. And I'm curious, how did you come about creating these explainer videos? And just explain briefly what an explainer video is.
Yeah, sure. Well, starting a little bit with my background, I was an online community manager, as we mentioned, and I sort of became convinced that that people needed better understanding. And this was the time when things like wikis and blogs and social networking and things like that were just getting started. And my wife Sasha and I looked around and saw that there were really no resources for people like my mom to really understand why they should care about a blog or a wiki. And so on sort of a lark, we started making these stop motion animated videos with paper cutouts on a whiteboard meant and designed to explain something like a wiki in a language that someone, an average person could understand. And to our surprise, they became big sort of viral sensations at the time. That was in 2007. And we are now credited with being the first of sort of the YouTube online world to make explainer videos. And these are videos with the very clear intent to pick a subject and make it understandable for the audience. And when you're thinking about the web, the audience really is almost everyone. So there's a particular kind of constraint there. But that's been our sole sort of focus for a long time, is making these videos. And now our business is based on licensing them to educators who use them in classrooms and higher education, along with middle schools and high schools.
Very good. And I assume there's also resources for companies that are trying to do the same.
Yes. Another part of our business is our videos all have the same look and feel. They have these artworks that we call Common Craft Style, and we started licensing the visuals from our videos, and our library is approaching 2,300 individual, what we call cutouts. Like, they're basically digital visuals all in the same style, because we're big advocates of using visuals. We want to give people a way to make their media more visual, and visuals are sometimes a barrier, you know, so we're trying to take down that barrier.
Right. Yeah. It's another hurdle, something else I have to get built, and busy product managers have enough on their hands just trying to figure out how to communicate the core message, let alone how am I going to enhance this through visuals on top of it.
Definitely.
But a good visual can really tell the story. It's back to that adage that a picture really is worth 1,000 words.
That's right.
And a video has to be worth a whole lot more. Very good. So big picture again, the steps here are when we're trying to take a complicated message, make it easy for our audience to understand, we're going to go through a planning activity. We're going to package, which might involve a metaphor or a story to go around with what we need to tell, and then present it in an engaging way. And more details for sure in your book. And tell us where we could find your book real quick.
It's anywhere books are sold online, Amazon, for example. You can also find more information at artofexplanation.com.
Okay. And the title itself of the book is The Art of Explanation.
That's right. Making your ideas, products, and services easier to understand.
Good. And I do always enjoy getting a innovation or success quote from my guests, and I asked you to bring one. Can you share that and why you chose it?
Sure. My quote is from Albert Einstein, and he said that any fool can make things bigger, more complex, and more violent. It takes a touch of genius and a lot of courage to move in the opposite direction. And the reason I like that quote is I think that, you know, I personally want to inspire people to be better explainers and to think about communication differently. And I think there is some courageousness in that, because a lot of people who are very knowledgeable in their work and have peers who are very smart might push back on you and say, like, why are you dumbing that down, or why do you care about that? Let's build new frontiers and forget about trying to make this simple for people. And I think that, you know, that we need more of that. We need the new frontiers, but we need people who can make it a point and an intention to make their work more understandable for the average person. And I think Albert Einstein really did a good job of saying that that's like a goal. That's where we should be going.
And if anyone knew how to make the complicated easier, it had to be Albert Einstein.
Yeah, he and Richard Feynman was really good at that, too.
Absolutely. He was brilliant at that. So modern day person at making the complicated easier.
Yeah.
Good. And so for people that want to also find out more about what you're doing, and I know when we were talking earlier, getting ready for this interview, you're also working on a new e-course, and I want to hear a little bit about that, and then just for anyone to find out your work again, your website that you would have them to go to, and share those resources with us.
Yes, definitely. Our big thing right now is what we call the Explainer Academy, and it's a set of online self-paced courses that really take what I talked about in the book in 2012 to a level that makes it more instructional. So it really is a course with activities, videos, downloadable templates, and documents. And it's really a place to learn more about becoming a better explainer, but also lots of videos and content about turning your ideas into videos using do-it-yourself tools. And you can find out more at explaineracademy.com. And to see Common Craft videos and take a look at our cutouts, you can find that at commoncraft.com.
And I appreciate you going through the framework too, the three Ps, that this is a key problem for product managers. As I said before, obviously we have to be able to communicate clearly, but there's very important times where we need to take these product concepts that, you know, they might be clear to us, but we need to package them in a way to communicate to the audience that we're trying to influence in a way that has meaning to them. And I appreciate your framework for helping give us a way to walk through that some, and for sharing the resources, and people can find out more about your work. And most of all, I appreciate your time. Thank you.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for listening. I love getting iTunes reviews and hearing why this podcast is valuable to listeners. If you're enjoying the podcast, please take a minute to leave a review on iTunes. You'll find all the notes from the discussion with Lee, the full transcript, and that link to his free mini course for becoming a better explainer at theeverydayinnovator.com/068. Please check it out. Keep innovating.
Thank you for listening to Product Innovation Training your customers will love you for. To learn more, please check out the blog at theeverydayinnovator.com. Keep innovating.